This is Company Cars, the podcast that tries to make sense of the car business. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Company Cars. On this episode, we'll talk about one really niche corner of the automotive business, and we'll talk about something that connects nicely with this time of the year in December. So having wonderful experiences, spending time with the people that you really enjoy, and that is overseas delivery programs in the automotive business. So on this episode, we'll talk about what these programs consist of, what automakers have offered these programs over the years, why automakers previously offered these programs, why they're dying off, and why there's only one program left. And we'll talk about the potential benefits and drawbacks of using these programs to buy your next car. We also have another rental car roulette, so we'll talk about a Cadillac XT5 that I had the chance of renting about a year ago. It was a brand new car when I rented it, so I'm pretty excited to talk about it. So what are overseas delivery programs? And the programs that I'll primarily be talking about today are largely European delivery programs offered by select European automakers over the years. So historically, these programs have been offered by these automakers, which include a few things. One is a discount on the new vehicle itself. Two is discounted or complimentary travel to Europe. Three, some perks related to planning a European vacation with your car. So things like a few weeks of free insurance, the support of a travel agent to help you plan your road trip, and four, some degree of a VIP experience on vehicle pickup day. So usually this includes some element of an airport pickup, and then one-night hotel room, a couple meals, and then chauffeurs to and from the pickup location to pick up your car. So these were all meant to be a production or experience to really get you to build memories with your car. And the automakers that offered these were luxury automakers. So this would be Mercedes-Benz, BMW, Audi, Saab, and Volvo were the ones who had these programs through the 1990s and 2000s, which are primarily going to be the programs that I talk about. So one footnote here is that GM also offers a factory delivery program for the Corvette. But the Corvette program is very different and very unique. It's offered in concert with the National Corvette Museum in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And you just go to the Corvette Museum and pick up your car. It's not quite as a boondoggle as the European ones. And so that's a footnote to note. The second footnote is BMW offers a performance center delivery option. So this is your car gets delivered to a U.S. location, either South Carolina or on the West Coast. And you go there, you pick it up from BMW there, and you get about a day of BMW instruction related to driving your car. And so you take some fun classes around performance driving. And that's to get you to experience some of the capabilities that you're buying when you get a BMW. So why do automakers offer these programs? So there's actually not a lot of documentation about the history of these programs. So about 10 years ago, the best resource I could find is someone put together a primer on these programs for people who were thinking about pursuing one of these. So this was written by a person named Jonathan Spira from Frequent Business Traveler, and he put a nice document together with the history of these programs and kind of what's been offered over time. So his document notes that European delivery originated after World War II, when U.S. soldiers who were stationed in Europe saw cars that they really wanted to bring back to the U.S., and so they would buy a car in Europe, put it on a boat, and bring it back into the U.S. and register it after their tour of duty. So in the era after World War II, there weren't quite as many import restrictions on cars from foreign countries, and so it was pretty easy for returning U.S. soldiers to do this. And over time, car dealerships actually realized that this was a way to differentiate their product offering from other car dealerships selling the same brand car. So if you're looking at a Mercedes-Benz, for example, one Mercedes dealer might offer to do this for you so that you can buy like a European configuration Mercedes-Benz and bring it back into the United States. And over the years, import restrictions on cars became stricter and stricter and stricter. So it became a little bit harder for dealerships to do this on their own. And then the automakers' U.S. divisions eventually took over this process from dealerships in the 1990s because there were import restrictions that restricted your ability to bring in a European market car into the United States after about the mid 1980s. So in the modern version, you are ordering a U.S. specification car. So you can't get like a BMW diesel and bring it into the U.S. You have to order a car that you otherwise could order in the United States. And then in exchange, you would get some cool experience and a discount to go with the car. So the primary purpose of these programs is marketing. So for most automakers, they observed that these programs generated really enthusiastic brand ambassadors. People would get excited about their vacation, they would get excited about their custom ordered car, and they would love to talk about their discounts, their vacation, the VIP treatment they received in Europe. And so this was a nice way to build loyalty amongst a very specific segment of customers who could honestly buy any luxury car they wanted. And so this was a way to attract a group of customer that maybe wasn't quite as price sensitive as your typical consumer who walks in and needs a car the same day, because these programs have long lead time because you're doing a custom order. So the automakers realized that there's a great marketing opportunity here, and they noticed that customers who participated in these overseas delivery programs tended to be car enthusiasts who were excited and who spent a lot of time engaging in enthusiast forums and online communities about their cars, and that these customers were like super excited and they were more likely to stay loyal to their brand of vehicle because they had participated in the overseas delivery program. So there were lots of people who purchased cars repeatedly through these programs and enjoyed lots of vacation. So from an automaker perspective, the reason they're offering this is primarily marketing. It doesn't really have a business case on its own, but it's a nice way to build kind of an ethos around the brand and to differentiate yourself against especially the Japanese automakers Lexus, Infiniti, and Acura, who don't offer a Japanese delivery experience, for example. And now it's time for a short break. We'll hear from our sponsors and we'll share some information about how to submit a listener question. The Company Cars podcast is sponsored by Rejected Conjectures Incorporated, a division of Integrated Derivatives. If you have a question that you want answered on the show, write us an email at companycarspodcast@gmail.com. The process of European delivery starts with your local dealership. So you would walk into your local dealership of a brand that offers this program, and most dealers would have a specific European delivery specialist who could walk you through the process to custom order a car to your specifications, organize delivery, and fill out all of the necessary paperwork, because there is a lot of paperwork that happens with an overseas or European delivery purchase. So most automakers that offered these programs historically had a fixed pricing chart, which was also really attractive to a lot of consumers because there was no price negotiations. And the lone exception to this historically was BMW. BMW would allow you to negotiate the price of the car with the dealership and would actually discount the car differently for European delivery. So in many cases, you could buy a BMW historically at a lower price through European delivery than through regular delivery if you played your cards right and negotiated correctly. So, but most of the programs had a fixed pricing chart. So you would just go to the PDF, you would figure out the exact configuration you want, you would add up all the numbers, and that would be the price of the car. For most dealerships, again, BMW accepted, these orders were not deducted from that dealer's annual allocation of new vehicles. So some automakers allocate vehicles to dealers based on a historical sales pattern. So if historically you sold 10 3 Series last year, we'll give you 12 3 Series this year, for example. And if you did a European delivery order, that 3 Series order, using the same example, would not come from that allotment of 12 3 Series the dealer was offered. So from a dealer perspective, most dealers viewed these sales as just incremental revenue and not anything that would take away from their existing business, because this was a sale that you could pick up. You would get paid a small fee by the automaker for arranging the sale, and it doesn't really detract from your other business, aside from having somebody fill out the order form, make sure everything was in place, and manage the customer. So from a dealer perspective, these weren't historically like too much impact on the bottom line, so to speak. And at most dealerships, there would usually be one person who's well-versed enough in the program and all the features of the program to work with these customers and to work closely with you to build a relationship, to construct your custom order, to help you track your custom order across the build cycle and everything. And so once you decided exactly what car you wanted with your European delivery specialist, you would submit the order. You would pay a non-refundable deposit, not to the dealership, but to the automaker, because it's the automaker's North American division that is ordering the car for you. And so you would pay like a few thousand dollars to Volvo Cars North America or BMW of North America. And once you ordered your car and had everything submitted, then the dealership would hand you off to an automaker approved travel agent who would help you with travel arrangements for your trip to the factory to pick up your car. So any discounts or rebates associated with the travel element of the purchase would be applied here. And the reason they want you to use their approved travel agent is there is some marketing relationship between the automaker and the travel agency, but also the automaker wants to make sure you have a very pleasant experience and they want to know your itinerary so they can organize the rest of it. And you would make all your travel arrangements with the approved travel agent. And then once you were notified your car was ready and ready to go, you would proceed on your travel arrangements and you would fly over to Europe and pick up the car. And you could choose different pickup points, but the most fun experiences are if you pick it up from the factory location, and there would be extra perks related to that. So you would go over on discounted or complimentary plane tickets. And then at the factory or at the location of pickup, the automaker would have a dedicated customer team that would make sure you had a wonderful experience. So usually they would pay for a few meals, they would pay for one or two nights in a hotel near the factory, and they would send a driver to pick you up from the airport to the hotel and then from the hotel to the factory. And also because your purchase included some element of insurance as well, so they would put a license plate on your car, and you could drive around Europe for a few weeks. And then when you were done, you would return the car to a designated shipping point. And then the automaker would bring your car back to the United States and ship the car to the dealer that you want to pick up your car from. So these programs were very focused on cultivating experiences, but they did require a lot of paperwork, a lot of coordination. And most programs required you to pay for the car before you left for Europe. So usually what that meant is you had to do all the purchase paperwork and transfer money before you left. So there was a very specific clientele that these programs were really built for. These programs weren't that large, so they're not responsible for a large portion of revenues or sales, but they were an aspirational experience that helped the automakers differentiate themselves from each other. So usually the factory experiences would also have some component that pays homage to the automaker's history or culture. So for the Volvo one, you can do a trip through the Volvo Museum for free. It's very Swedish themed in the sense that you can also take these prepackaged road trips that are that allow you to explore Sweden and see all the different sites of Sweden, for example. So I would still love to do one of these someday. I've never had a chance to personally do one of these, if I've ever had the chance, but these programs are rapidly shrinking and we're down to one automaker who offers these. So these programs have always been a bit of a niche offering. So again, tip of the hat to Jonathan Spira of frequentbusinesstraveler.com. He noted that even at its peak, only about 5,000 shoppers a year split between four or five automakers opted into this program. So this was such a small portion of the general automotive market, which could easily be 15, 16, 17 million cars a year. These programs were also really expensive for the automakers to operate because you need a lot of people, a lot of coordination, a lot of forms. Just think about that process that I just walked through. You have a dealership specialist, someone at North American headquarters who manages the program, someone who works at an approved travel agency to manage the program, and then a team at the factory to run this. So it's a lot of headcount for not that many sales. So this was really expensive for the automakers to operate. And these were super desirable customers to attract and retain. It just required so much coordination effort, and this effort was getting harder and harder to justify, especially in recent years. So automakers slowly began dropping these programs because either people weren't interested or people wanted the car now, or the price gap between taking a car off the lot and doing a special order started to widen, in the sense that for a while in the 2010s, it was much cheaper to take a car off the lot than to do European delivery. So these programs started to die off. And the other piece of the puzzle is travel to Europe became less and less exotic as it used to be, because you can now take a European vacation with low-cost airlines like WOW or Iceland Air or Norwegian Air Shuttle in the 2010s. And so people began going to Europe much more frequently, and these programs started to lose some of their aspirational appeal for travelers. So Audi dropped their program after 2018, BMW dropped theirs in 2020, Saab closed in 2010. And so at the end, we just had two automakers who had these programs, Mercedes-Benz and Volvo. And Mercedes-Benz paused their program during COVID, and they said, we're going to put this on pause, we'll be back after COVID, and they never came back. So they basically ended it in 2019. And Volvo, over the years, they've started scaling back some of their benefits. They revisit this on a year-to-year cycle. So for 2023, there was no discount on the car itself, which was a huge incentive to do the program. So that kind of took away a lot of the appeal from a discount perspective for some of these customers, because even though most customers participating in these programs were really affluent, everybody loves a good deal, right? And so if you're taking away some of the deal element, then that kind of reduces the incentive for customers to do this. Porsche's program is very niche, and they actually charge customers to go on this program. So theirs, I think, might still be out there. I haven't checked lately, actually, but theirs is really different in that you have to pay extra to do it. And so I think it's never really been particularly popular or talked about for that reason. What's good is that for 2024, Volvo has brought back a discount. So Volvo has brought back a 5% discount off of MSRP for overseas delivery orders. But the program is still kind of a shell of itself. So during the 2000s and 2010s, you could actually order unique options that could not be ordered without the overseas delivery program. So there were usually a couple paint colors, one or two options that you could unbundle from an option package in overseas delivery cars specifically. So you were still getting a US specification car, but there were some unique features offered only through overseas delivery. But that's all gone now. Now it's just the same as the US traditional order book, and you can choose what you want, and then at the end you just apply a 5% discount, basically, and that's the Volvo program. So the programs have kind of decreased in their benefits over the years, but it's really good news that Volvo brought back a small discount for 2024, and so that keeps me encouraged that at least they're trying to maintain their program and keep it alive and encourage people to pursue these experiences. Would I recommend European delivery to a shopper out there? I think if you're already buying a Volvo and you have some lead time into having to have a new car, like let's say you know 6 months from now is going to be when you need a new car and you know exactly what you want, I would really encourage it. I think everybody that I've seen that has done it on forums and such has had a really positive experience, and they've really scaled it back, like I said earlier. They still offer the travel agent assistance, two premium economy tickets to Europe, and the VIP ground experience, so it's still really fun. I mean, and a 5% discount isn't anything incredible in this climate, especially for Volvo cars, which are being discounted quite a bit more than that usually. But if you're interested in having a unique experience and you're planning to drive this car for a while, it could be a lot of fun. Like, it could be a really cool way to have a really nice European vacation and to save a little money on a rental car. One quirk of the program now is that you can't lease, so you'd have to buy out the car if you use this program. So you have to be planning to own the car for a while, I would say. Volvos tend to lease really well, so if you're interested in leasing, this may not be the best fit for you. And really the other downside is the long lead time. So it takes 5 to 8 weeks for your car order to be ready for pickup, and then another 10 to 12 weeks after you are done in Europe for the car to arrive back at the United States at your dealership. So you need some flexibility on timeline with this, but everything I've seen has made it seem like it's a wonderful experience, and it's something that I would personally love to do someday if I ever find myself buying a Volvo. And now it's time for Rental Car Roulette. On this segment of Rental Car Roulette, we'll talk about a rental car that's uniquely American, so a twist from the European cars we've been talking about on this episode. So I was in Phoenix last fall, and I was there for a personal trip, and I struck the jackpot in terms of rental cars. In the selection aisle, there were a bunch of different cars, but I was most intrigued by this Cadillac XT5. So this was Cadillac's midsize SUV. It's their answer to the Lexus RX, and so it's kind of sized between the compacts and the midsizes. It has two rows, not three rows, and so it's kind of aiming for that volume segment of the market where the Lexus RX sits. And this was a very nice 2022 Cadillac XT5. So when I looked at the odometer, it had 6 miles on the odometer when I rented it. And I returned it with about 250 miles on the odometer. So I got to drive it a fair bit around Phoenix on the highway and in the city over the course of about 2.5 days. So this car was a mid-trim XT5. So it had the bigger engine, it had the V6 engine, and had some nice additional options on the car. It didn't really have any packages on top of being the middle trim, so it did not have adaptive cruise control, which seems like a really strange configuration and omission on a car that's $55,000 new from an MSRP perspective. So it just seemed like a weird omission. The car had a panoramic sunroof, it had heated seats, it had a Bose sound system, so it had some of the luxury touches you would expect. It had a leather interior. But it was missing some of these advanced driver features that I would expect at this price point. The Bose audio system was very nice. I'm not a big audiophile, but I enjoyed it. And it was a fairly pleasant car to drive. It was easy to drive around the highway. It struck me as a car that's most at home on the highway and cruising. It wasn't very fun to drive, but that's not its intention. So the seating position was good. You sat relatively high up. You could see forward and around you. There was some obstructed visibility to the back based on the sloping roof line of the car. But in the end, I think the car was a very, very nice rental car. I think for $55,000 MSRP, I don't think I would spend $55,000 of my own money on an XT5 brand new. I mean, that's a lot of money to spend on a car. And at that price point, you have a lot of choices. So you could choose a Lexus RX. You could have certain trims of the Acura MDX as well. And you could have the Lincoln Corsair or Lincoln Nautilus, which would probably be the closest American competitor. It would be the Nautilus. You could also have some really nice mainstream SUVs too that are fully loaded. So you could get a fully loaded Toyota Highlander. You could get a fully loaded Nissan Pathfinder, for example, in that price point. And so, like, I wouldn't necessarily spend new car money on this, but in preparing for this episode, I went and looked at what used ones were selling for, and there's a lot of variation, of course, but you can buy these kind of in the mid to upper 30,000 range for clean 2020 or 2021 cars at that price point, so kind of in that sweet 3 to 4 year old spot. And at that price point, it's much more palatable in this like low to mid 30s, maybe high 30s, depending on the car. And especially if you're willing to take an X rental, because the X rental ones have even further discounts. I think I saw some X rental XT5s on the market in like the mid to upper 20s, even depending on the mileage. And if you're buying a car that you plan to drive into the ground, an X rental XT5 may not be the worst idea because parts will be relatively affordable. The XT5 has parts that are common to tons of other GM products, and so you don't have to buy the Cadillac-branded parts. You can buy parts, I suspect many parts from a Chevy Equinox or GMC Terrain probably are the same as what's in an XT5. Those three cars share an engineering platform. There's also the engine in this car is shared with lots of other GM products. And so I think your ownership cost might not be too bad. This car is later in its life cycle, so a lot of the manufacturing issues, quality issues, I would expect to be resolved by this point. And most of the rental car grade ones that you see out there will be similarly equipped to the one that I drove. So it'll be this middle trim premium luxury with some nice bonus features in the car, but probably not with some of the driver assist features. So you got to be careful because the driver assist features were optional, especially adaptive cruise control. And so you have to search through the cars and look for the correct buttons and everything. My car did have forward collision warning, automatic emergency braking, and lane keep assist. It just didn't have adaptive cruise control, which for a car like this would be super useful, actually, because you're probably going to be driving this car long distances. And it was one of those things where if I saw another XT5 at Hertz, I probably would take it. I think it would be a nice car to drive around as a rental. But I don't know if I would spend my own money on a new one. I might buy a used one, depending on the price point and the exact unit that I'm looking at. But the car was practical, had a big cargo area, was reasonably fuel efficient, given that it had this really nice V6 engine, and it was a comfortable car. It was a nice car to drive around. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Rental Car Roulette and Company Cars. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to send in any questions you might have about the automotive business or car shopping to companycarspodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram. This has been Jesse Chan, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you if you have any questions.